Blog Talk Radio.
Enough of my yakking. What do you say? Let's boogie.
And that is my cue to start the show. Welcome to another Thursday edition of the Hard Rockin' Sports Show, live from high atop Hard Rockin' Sports Studios in beautiful scenic Monroe, New Jersey. We are your three-hour weekly get-together where we bring you all the biggest news from around the worlds of hard rock, heavy metal, and, of course, the wide world of sports. And, guys, It's another Thursday night, August the 26th, getting late in the year, folks. And, of course, in the year of our beloved Jesus Christ, 2021. Guys, I hope you've had a great week. It's been hot. I've had a very tough week. I'm getting old. I see it. I feel it. But I still love Thursday nights. I get to talk with my best friends, one of my dearest buddies, and the guy who's like a brother to me, Mr. Jeff Towinski. We get to talk about with you guys, bring up some of the biggest news topics for sports and music. Tonight, it's a little bittersweet. We love to do the show, and we love to acknowledge people. You know, sometimes the show has to face the realities of life. You know, it's not all about missing hidden fastballs and missed draft picks and wasted opportunities and bad albums. Sometimes it's about true life. And this week, we pay tribute to one of Staten Island's best guitar players. From what I understand, a great guy and a guy who's played in the island music scene for a very long time. With the passing of Mr. David Weeks, best known, I guess, for the JWB band, which I opened up the show with a little bit of their music, and we'll play a little bit more later. But David, unfortunately, passed away this week suddenly, and Jeff thought it would be a great idea to pay a little tribute to Dave. And, I backed Jeff up, and even though not knowing Dave, I do know the JWB band. They did open up. They did close one of the Hard Rock and Sports benefits back in the day, so we thought we'd do something to pay a little tribute. We'll have his singer, Mario Ortiz, pop it up a little later on. I understand his drummer, Steve Barber, will also be calling in. And his daughter, I don't know her name, I apologize, but she will also be calling in. We may have some other people checking in to say hello. And we'll do our best to pay tribute. We'll play another song a little bit later on to from the JWB band with featuring Dave. And hopefully we'll get some stories out there and get to know Dave and maybe let you guys know Dave a little bit along the way. And, you know, again, you guys want to check in, 347-826-9934. That's the number on the radio side. Of course, you can reach out to Jeff and I on a DM, and we'll get you right on a video if you want. And you can come on and talk about Dave and some of the other topics. We also have the passing of Charlie Watts, the 80-year-old drummer for the Rolling Stones, passed away this week. We'll get to that a little bit and some of the things on the wrong side. I'm the biggest Stones fan, but you know, when guys like that and legendary bands go, we gotta acknowledge it. Rod Gilbert passed away this week from the Goal Again line, from the Goal Again line, New York Rangers of the 60s and 70s. Rod was Mr. Ranger, and we'll get a little bit maybe on him tonight. We got Yankees, Mets, Giants. We got football. We got some Geezer Butler. We got a lot of stuff to talk to you guys about tonight, so I'm glad you jumped in. Before we get too far, I'm going to pick Jeff right up. But I do want to send out our heartfelt condolences to the families of everybody who lost their lives today at the attack in Kabul. The needless, senseless violence that our president has forced upon this country and its troops and its citizens is reckless. And if this was a different president, he would be screamed about and probably threatened with impeachment. And I'm not going to make the show about that tonight, but I do want to send out a heartfelt condolences to all those families who lost somebody. And I want to say we give you our best, and we wish you well, and those who were injured as well. So, again, that's just a little something. We're going to get to Dave's thing a little later on. We'll talk a little Yankees again. Yankees, great playing great baseball. Have a little bit of a conundrum right now, the Yankees, guys. Players coming back. Do you mix in the new players? You know, what's working is what's going right now is working. That's a tough move for the Yankees. We'll get to a little bit of that. The Mets stink. I was fed up with what I saw last night. We'll talk about the Jets, the Giants, lots of football. Everybody's kind of pumped up about football. Lots to get to. But let's get Jeff on, and let's get the show started. Guys, welcome to Hard Rock and Sports. And remember, probably Monday night you can catch us on Sports Wire. We played last week on Monday or Tuesday night. So thanks to Tom Bryce and everybody over at Sports Wire. Sportitarium.com/player exclamation point. I'll give you some more information on that. You can get some repeats over there. And remember, Jeff and I – And our good friend Jarmar Hefka will be on Sundays on SportsWire doing a little football show. We'll get more to that later. So, again, let's bring on the backbone of the Hard Rockin' Sports Show, my dear friend and the sexiest guy in on his side of the screen, Mr. Jeff Towinski. What's up, Hefe?
What's going on, man?
Jeff, tough week, but let's start it off like we always do, and let's say, Jeff, how was your week?
Well, not exactly the best of weeks, but, you know, we started off with the storm and a couple extra hours overtime this week. That'll be nice when the money comes, but then the week kind of went south.
Ah.
You know, with the, I mean, Charlie Watts died, and like you, not the biggest Stones fan, but, you know, when music legends start to die.
Yeah.
You have to acknowledge it and realize
that
there's nobody backfilling. There's nobody. There is no next Charlie Watts right now. I don't give a shit what anybody says. It's just not there.
Well, you know, Jeff, it's like, you know, it's not like sports where you have the next group of Yankees coming in. You know, Derek Jeter's Mr. Yankee for 20 years, and now it's Aaron Judge. You know, it's not the same in music right now. And, you know, it sucks. You know, Jeff, before I just want to say a big thank you to you and your wife. We had a really nice time at your barbecue. She's a great cook, made a lot of food, and wish, unfortunately, for the weather, which I wound up losing power for about 12 or 13 hours. So getting home to the dogs was important. But we had a great time. We love seeing everybody, and you guys do an amazing job with that. So thank you for having us over, and I look forward to the next one.
No problem, man. Thank you for coming and hanging out. You know, a lot of childhood friends there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it is what it is.
Yeah.
It's always nice to, you know, my brother, you, Paul, it was so nice to have everybody there.
Yeah.
We ate a lot of leftovers.
No, did you really?
Days following up. Yes, yes, we did.
You know, I'll tell you what. I can only imagine because we ate and there was still a pile of food
up. I was actually going to ask Raul to come and play.
He retired.
Serenade us a little bit.
He retired.
I understand that, but he's going to be back soon. I got a feeling.
Okay.
I have not spoken to Raul since the last show, but I know he's a man. He's not going to stay down long. I don't care what he says. He'll be back one day soon. But I was going to ask him to come and play, but then with the pending weather, September 12th, retirement's over. With the impending storm, I was just like, I get it. You know, if you ask these guys to come over. But next time, I promise, Raul, we'll have some live bands. A live band, there's not room for bands.
Yep.
So we could definitely have you. Tommy could attest to that.
Yes. Listen, yard was a little tight, but was very comfortable. And if it wasn't for the weather, we would have been sitting out on the patio and having a good time and having a lot of fun and again, getting to catch up with a lot of good friends. So lots to talk about, lots to get to tonight. Again, we'll get to the Dave Week stuff probably about 8 o'clock. We have Steve Barber calling in about then. His daughter will be checking in, and then Mario Ortiz will be checking in also about 8:30. We played a little video to open up. We played up some music to start the show.
Very sad about Dave, man. It's
you know what, Jeff? I don't know. Do you want to say a little something now? Or do you want to hold it till you were ready to start about 5 to 8?
I'll just say this much. You know, I don't want to say too much until, you know, the guests get here. But Dave is somebody that I met. I knew of Dave before I actually met Dave because he was working in Manhattan and somebody else kept telling me stories about him. I think the guy had a man crush on Dave because every story involved around Dave.
So
by the time Dave actually got there to Staten Island, I had already known a lot about Dave, and Dave had no idea who I was.
Right.
So I knew that Dave played in a band or played guitar, so we started to talk about stuff like that a lot. And, you know, we had common ground with one another in the music scene, and, you know, just like we all do on Staten Island.
Sure.
And you know, it was always cool. He would come by and visit me at work sometimes, and we'd talk a little bit, and he'd tell me what was going on with his band. And, you know, just a great guy. That was the sad part. I mean, it's always sad when somebody ends up dying, but, you know, when it seems as though everybody is going to love Dave, did love Dave, and is going to miss Dave, and, you know, you feel bad for his family, and just a really nice guy. And that's why I felt as though that the show was coming up, and we just like to acknowledge him a little bit tonight. And, you know, just he was on his way to work, and whatever happened.
Yeah, listen, Staten Island's a small place, and everybody's got a connection to everybody. And, you know the names, even if you don't know the faces. And I said it before, I said it in one of the posts, and I say it, and I'll say it again. We all have to look out for each other. We're from Staten Island. There is a history there. No matter how you look at it, you tie back to somebody. And we also should pay tribute and celebrate their lives and not let them be forgotten without some kind words. And, using the show is appropriate for us. And everybody was invited. Everybody had the opportunity to say they wanted to come on. And, again, I'll say this. I want to keep the negativity off this show.
Negativity for tonight will definitely be kept off.
Correct. It's not our business. And frankly, Jeff, I really don't care about the inner workings of other bands. And, that's between those guys. As long as it doesn't bring it to our doorstep here on the Hard Rock and Sports Show, do what you have to do. But tonight is not about feuds or people not getting along. Tonight's about Dave Weeks. And hopefully we'll have a few people on to say some nice words, tell some stories. We play a little music, and we do our best to celebrate Dave's life and let his family know that he was well respected, and he will be missed.
Yeah, you have to do the right thing.
Yes,
that's all there is to that. And then with Charlie Watts.
Yeah.
Let me ask you something. I mean, I would have loved to have Raphael on with this one, and got to ask, like, have the odds on Keith Richards changed?
Wow.
you
got to tell you.
One in front of you, step forward up beyond the line, and, your number's coming up, bro.
Well, the bolt of lightning finally hit close. It just was a little bit to the right, So
I hear you, Raul.
Yeah, so it's yeah. I'll start off by saying I'm not a Rolling Stone fan. You do understand the impact and the career of the band and the individual people. I would say for me, though, Charlie Watt was probably the least known of the Stones for me. He was probably a very quiet guy. The guy seemed to have some issues in his life. Very creative guy. Seemed to be the quiet guy in the corner in the Rolling Stones.
There was a couple people posted this meme that I thought was absolutely great about Charlie Watts. And they said that Mick Jagger called his hotel room in the middle of the night.
Short story. Go ahead. Tell it.
Yeah. They were fucking drinking down there and everything and having a good time. And he says, "Where's my drummer?" So he must have told him, "I'll be right there," or whatever. He hung the phone up, took a shower, shaved, put on a suit and a tie, marched downstairs to the bar in the hotel, punched Mick Jagger in the face, and said, "Don't ever call me your drummer again. You're my singer." And turned around and went back upstairs. Now, at first I thought it was a meme.
Yes.
But it turns out it's a real story.
Yes.
It's in Keith Richards' book.
Yes.
And I'm like, holy shit. Could you imagine this motherfucker getting up in the middle of the night, taking a shower, shaving?
Yeah.
I shave 3 times a month if I'm lucky.
Yeah, it's funny. Yeah. Listen, you never know. We don't know the inner workings of the bands, and there's a lot of off time. Once they're out on stage, and especially bands like that. But when you read stories like that, you crack up. But you realize these guys, they're around each other months at a time, hours and hours a day. And I'm sure there's a lot of time that they want to just, again, punch each other in the face. So,
dude,
funny story.
Almost guarantee you that these guys probably want to kill one another more often than even like to look at one another.
I would agree.
And how many times maybe Charlie Watts is just like, "Oh, this fucking Mick Jagger, what a fucking jerk off. Oh, my God." And Keith Richards saying, you just don't know. Like you said, it must be great to be inside their heads for a couple minutes.
Oh, absolutely. Now, I want to do this, Jeff. We got 40 minutes before we kind of start paying tribute to Dave. Okay, that's I guess Steve Barb will be calling about 8, and then his daughter's in there somewhere, and then.
Well, the daughter and Mario were supposed to be at the same location.
Oh, okay, so they're gonna, okay. So either way, so what I'd like to do right now is I'd like to get some sports in, and then in between them we'll do a little music, And then after Mario and Dave's daughter, we'll try to finish up with whatever sports we have left, the music we have left. So I want to bang in about 40 minutes of some Yankees, Mets, and a little bit of Giants and Jets with you. How's that?
Okay.
We're going to get to a little later on. I definitely want to talk about later on some of the quarterbacks situations seem to be clarifying a little bit. I'd like to, Jeff, I need you to do me a favor when you get a chance. I need you to Google something for me.
What's up?
Okay. You know the thing, like, where's Waldo?
Yeah.
Where's Deshaun Watson at this point? I hear he's in camp avoiding fines. I got to ask the question real fast. I don't want to belabor because we've talked about this before. But are they going to suspend him? Is he going to be allowed to play? Is he just on the roster? It looks like Tyrod Taylor's the starting quarterback. Jeff, where is Deshaun Watson, and what's his role for what team this year?
He certainly ain't going anyplace anytime soon, although I have read some stories here and there that, once they try to trade him, he's going to go.
Yeah.
Somebody is definitely going to take him, which I can't understand, because how much are the Texans going to be willing to hold out to get?
Correct.
And how much is another team?
What's the price? What's the price? I mean,
don't know what his punishment.
Yeah, exactly right.
Give a number one pick for next year and the year after in hopes that he only gets suspended the rest of his season.
But is he going to get suspended this season? I mean, they haven't announced anything. He's not on the commissioner's list. I think it's an interesting topic. We're going to get to all the quarterbacks. I want to talk about the Saints, the Broncos. I see Frankie. Are you happy with Teddy Bridgewater getting the job over in the Broncos? I didn't find that very surprising, Jeff. Were you surprised that Bridgewater got the job?
Bridgewater got that job. That he's
he's the starting quarterback. They've already announced that he's going to open up. He's going to start opening tonight.
I don't know, man. Because let me ask you this: he was against Drew Lock.
Yeah, Drew Lock.
If he was that much better, why did it take so long to win the job?
It
leads me to be a little worried that did they take the lesser of two evils, not the better of two quarterbacks?
Well, I think that's a good point. I think the end result of that is I think they wanted Lock to win the job, and he just didn't do enough to do it. So they reluctantly, in my opinion, I'm not in their war rooms. I'm not in the coach's office. I think reluctantly they said, okay, we're going to go with Teddy Bridgewater and leave Drew Lock, which I think is an indictment, obviously, to me, of Drew Lock. So
I got to agree with you, of course.
Yeah. So we'll get to all the quarterback situations again, probably after 8:30, but right now, I want to just go over a little bit over to the Mets. Pathetic. I've watched a lot of their games this week. Last night irritated me. And here's what irritated me last night about the Mets. Okay, so seventh inning of the game, pitches. Tywan Walker's pitching really well. He's given up one real hit. Gets to the seventh and he gives up. I guess it was an E5 that got the first runner on. McNeil botched the pop-up, first and second, nobody out, 74 pitches, and they went out and they took him out of the game. Made no sense. At all. It's analytics. Oh, well, third time through the lineup, we got to take him out. Jeff, sometimes you can't go by what's on a piece of paper. You got to watch what's happening on the field. And the guy had given up one legitimate hit the entire night. The game of baseball has become computer. It's like a computer game.
Well, you listen, I don't know much about the analytics because I just can't bring myself to watch baseball.
I got you.
I don't. But you don't know, maybe this guy was complaining about some injury and they wanted to see.
He said after the game he was basically pissed off. He was taken out of the game.
Well, you don't know. Maybe he was said to say that. You don't know with these guys.
I guess.
Unless you are able to see both sides, you can only assume what you're told or assume what you see. A lot of these guys want to stay in the Mets, if I'm right. What are they, like 6.5, 7.5 out by now?
I think they're 6.5 out in not only the division but the wild cards. And listen, they can't hit a fastball. They can't come up with a big hit in a big spot. They have looked just weak. I think they're 2-11, 2-10 on this road on the road trips. They're playing all the West Coast teams. They played the Dodgers at home, went on the road, played the Dodgers and the Giants on the road, then came back to play the Giants, and basically they won 2 of 10 games against probably, I would say, that two of the top three teams in baseball, if not the top two teams in baseball. So they've been exposed.
It doesn't look good for them, even if they happen to make the postseason. It's not looking very good for them.
No, listen, they got a lot of DeGrom's out, and they're talking about ramping him up and maybe getting him back on the field this year. You know, listen, DeGrom's out, says his arm hurts. There's nothing on the MRIs. I think he's had 7 MRIs. He's had every test known to man. They can't figure it out. Here's the problem. The guy's not the biggest guy in the world. He throws 100 miles an hour more often than anybody else. He's putting a strain on his arm. And unless they figure out a way to not put that strain on his arm, the guy's never going to pitch a full season. So, I don't know what they do with this. But I'll tell you what really irked me. And Patrick, I don't know if you watched the game last night, but they get to the ninth inning. They should have been out of it. The Giants make 2 bad plays. Okay, and the Jets wind up loading the bases. Lindor comes up, bases loaded as a pinch hitter. Now, first thing that bothered me was the guy's been out for a month, plays the night before, then they give him the next day off. The guy's been out for a month. He's 20-something years old. He can play 2 nights in a row. What are we doing? Okay, forget about it. So he doesn't play, pinch hits the ninth inning.
2 nights in a row.
Yeah, pinch hits, swings at the very first pitch, pops up. Runs the first, and he's coming off the field. He's got a big smile on his face. Are we kidding ourselves? Is this guy kidding? It annoyed the piss out of me. They get to bases loaded, and I got to tell you, the Nimmo thing, guys, Nimmo's a good player. He's not a great player, and I love a guy who hustles. But, Jeff, you got a guy, he walks, and he's sprinting to first base. You want to sprint on a ground ball, I'm in for. When you walk, run to first. Take the sprinting thing out. You're annoying me now. But past that, then Alonso comes up and hits a weak pop-up to second base. Not even barely a line drive to second base. Game's over. Mets are inept. I'd be surprised if Rojas finishes the year. Okay? They have no life. They can't hit. They can't hit a fastball. The Mets are putrid. And I think it's time they have to blow up this team, and they're going to have to take a real hard look at this pitching staff. Are we really going to build around DeGrom, Syndergaard? You know, Syndergaard has to stay on the field forever. This team needs to be blown up, and you want to build it around Alonso and DeGrom and some of the younger guys? Oh, okay, but you know, Davis has got to go. You're going to have Cano stuck there sometime next year at second base. Javi Baez to play second or third? You know, this team needs to be fixed. So, you know, bad job by the Mets for the last week. They put themselves in a position now where it's going to get to the point where they're going to play meaningless games in September. But let's see how they rebound tonight and this weekend. The Yankees, Jeff, I know you're not paying attention, but the Yankees are on fire.
Well, that I know. I know the Yankees are doing a lot better. I mean, you know, I don't watch them.
11 in a row.
Glimpse in the standings once
yep.
in a while.
11 games in a row.
Turn it on.
Yep, 11 in a row. Now, here's the problem for the Yankees, and it's a good problem. So they've been without some of their bigger players. Gleyber Torres has been out for a little while now. Sellers has been out for a while. Kluber's been out. Domingo Germán, the last two guys are pitchers. So they've got a bunch of guys out, and they're starting to trickle back in. Yes, Patrick, absolutely. He will. I know it's too late to be done now, and you're probably right. But again, if you had a guy on your staff that you want to give a shot to, you may want to think about it. Although, if I were the Mets, I would be bringing in Buck Showalter. You had to bring Buck Showalter in with a young guy as a bench coach who's going to be the heir apparent. That's how I would fix the Mets. But that's a different story. So the Jets, to the Yankees, Jeff. And again, guys, Hard Rockin' Sports, 347-826-9934. Jeff and Tom talking sports, talking music, and paying tribute to not only Charlie Watts, but Staten Island's own Dave Weeks. We'll get to that about 8 o'clock. We're glad you guys are checking in. We're also on the SportsWire Radio Network. I think it's going to be every Monday night. So Jeff and I, you can hear us all doing this show. This show will be rebroadcast at least once or twice a week. And of course, Jeff, myself, and our good friend John Marhefka will be coming to you every Sunday morning talking football. and enjoying that starting the first week of the season. But Jeff, so the Yankees have a problem is they're getting all these guys back, but the guys that they brought up, this kid Velasquez, and guys like Abreu and Heal, and all these other young kids who have shown themselves and interjected a lot of energy, you know, maybe losing their spot. And I say to myself, if you're the Yankees, do you ruin the chemistry? You're 11-0. You're probably playing the best baseball, the best in all of baseball right now. I gotta tell you the truth, it's a hard look for the Yankees to go back to what might not have been working as good as it was right now. It's a tough call.
Listen, I mean, you got to go for it while you get the chance, you know.
Yeah.
We're heading – next week at this time is after September 1st.
Yep.
You know, we'll be into September, so that you get into the last month of the season. They don't have a playoff spot secured yet, do they, the Yankees?
No, nobody is. They're four games out of first place and about 2.5 games in the wild card game. They're up.
Oh, so they have a wild card?
Yes, they're it's not secured, but they are right now in the wild card seat. Yes, they have the number one wild card.
I should have clarified my question.
Yes.
That's what I asked, what I meant when I asked if they had a shot, you know, a wild card spot or a playoff spot secure.
Good.
You know, are they in the running for one right now?
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, at least they got that going for them.
Mm-hmm.
But by the way, Anthony Carey, how you doing, man? It would be nice to see them, you know, get into the playoffs and make some noise.
Yep.
Every year they get into the playoffs and it's the same thing. Well, I don't know if they got the pitching. I don't know. They're going to win every 10-11 game, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, 11-10, 10-9, 10-7 game or stuff like that. They're going to win every one of those, but they're not going to be able to win a 2-1, 3-2 baseball game because they just can't – they don't have the pitching. They have the hitting to kill everybody, but they don't have the pitching to keep them remotely close. So –
you know, yeah,
you die by the sword, you live by the sword, you die by the sword, so to speak. You can't, you know, think you're going to club everybody to death and just blow through. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah, I would say during this streak of 11 in a row, and they go for 12 tonight against the A's later on. I'll get to watch a little bit of that before I go to bed. But they are getting some good pitching from, you know, guys like, you know, Cole's been back, been better. Jameson Taillon has been great in the second half of the season. Montgomery's been good since he's been back from the DL. He probably was good okay before that. So I tell you what, the Yankee pitcher staff's been okay. The bullpen's been a little shaky. Britton's out now. Chapman's a disaster. And I thought Boone did a great job the other night. Two outs in the ninth, and he couldn't find the plate. They pulled him out, and he brought Peralta in to shut the door, and it was a nice job. A lot of guys would have left the closer in there and lived and died with them. I thought Boone did a nice job. And Patrick, to your comment, I'll say this. A lot of people wanted Boone fired. And I said, I didn't care because I think they needed a change, but I didn't think it was going to make a big deal because here's why. Boone is just signing the card, the lineup card. You know, the Yankees are winning and losing because the players play well or they play bad. They don't do a lot of bunting. They don't do a lot of hit and runs. They don't do a lot of stealing bases. Although this last couple weeks, I've seen a lot of stolen bases and a few bunts. So I don't give him a lot of the credit for the bad, and I'm not giving him a lot of credit for the good. I just think the players have turned it on, and you got a lot of influx of youth and energy with Velasquez. I think Odor's did a nice job. I loved what Rizzo's done, and I know post people are knocking Gallo, but I like Gallo the way he plays. This is Stanton's been great in the outfield. So listen. This is a tough team. They got a tough, you know, some tough situation to figure out how to get these guys back in the lineup and not lose the mojo. But I'm looking forward to some great Yankee baseball. The true test, Jeff said it right. Jeff, once again, you are on the money. The Yankees of the last 5 or 6 years, they played great during the regular season. This year's turned to the second half, but it's the October failures which have hurt this Yankee team.
Look, she got a haircut.
Sharon. So I think that's the biggest thing. The real test for these Yankees is in October. It isn't today. I agree with that.
You know, every year they make the playoffs, so they're going to make the playoffs one way or another. And they do for the most part. You know, I can't remember the last year that they didn't make the playoffs.
Yeah.
But I also can't remember the last year that they were making a run at the World Series either.
Well, 2017, they were within one game of going to the World Series. They lost. That was when all this banging on the drum by the Astros and this and that. That was as close to get. But again, could not win a big game. Yeah. Yeah, and again, you know, I thought they were the better team. They turned it on in September. I thought they played great baseball. But, again, it's been the same failure. They get into October, and they cannot find a big hit. They can't get a big out, especially from their closer. So these Yankees have to change the script. And when it comes to this October, keep playing this kind of baseball. But, you know, they have to turn it on and turn it up. And, you know, yeah, and Patrick, listen, you're 100% right. The Yankees will probably make the playoffs, and the Mets won't. The question for me, Patrick, and you're a Mets fan, you know, if you're the Mets and you're 8 games out, do you get DeGrom back on the field? Do you put him out there to see if he's got anything? Do you sit him on the bench and say, let's try for next year? And you got to figure out why he's having problems, but they can't find anything on the MRIs. Got to happen.
That's
somewhere along the line.
That's got to be a scary situation. Oh, you're getting all these MRIs and they're not finding anything?
Yeah, nothing at all. That,
you
know,
it's got to make you think, like, what is going on?
And yeah, no.
I can't spell October.
Yeah, it's a tough spot for the Mets. If you're a Mets fan, you started out this year with a lot of high hopes.
Let's break down the Mets season.
Sure, go ahead.
I mean, God help me if Carmine is listening to the show.
I agree.
But,
yeah.
You know,
he's on the islands, I think, somewhere.
Oh, okay. So he probably can't get his reception anyway.
Yeah.
But every year, the Mets seem to be in first place and winning the World Series by April 10th.
Yeah.
You know, they're like 6-1 or whatever it is. And, you know, like, wow, this is a dominant team. If they just play this way the whole way, they'll go 161-1. You know, they're going to win everything. And then the wheels fall off by the time. Way before Memorial Day, by the time May 1st comes, it's like, oh, my God, this team sucks and this, that, and the other thing. So, you know, they're notorious for coming out of the gate quick and then, like, instantly extinguishing themselves. I don't understand that.
Yeah, again, this year it was a little bit longer, and it was a little bit if you're a Met fan, you were fooled, and here's why you were fooled. Because the division was bad in the first half of the season. The Mets weren't good. They were just in the worst division in baseball, and they were beating up on really bad teams, and they were able to survive. And, you know, now that the Braves have started playing real well and the Phillies have played better, the Mets have it. And they ran into the Yankees, and they ran into, you know, again, this West Coast strip. They started out, Jeff, a week and a half ago. They were 2.5 games in first place. And now they're 6.5 games out.
I know. They're going down fast.
So, yeah, it was a mirage. That's the best way to say it. You know, the Mets looked like the Mets were in first place, but they were a third-place, first-place team because the rest of their division was bad. And now the rest of the division is playing well. The Mets have dropped. So, you know, listen, I don't think Luis Rojas is a bad manager. I just don't think he's a good manager. I think he's... You know, too quick to pull guys and not let the game dictate it a little bit. And here's the indictment, Jeff. You got a bunch of major league players who can't hit a fastball. They just cannot hit a fastball. And you know, they've had taken bad seasons, you know, or not good seasons from Davis and McNeil and Dominic Smith. McCann's been good behind the plate, but he can't hit. You know, there's a lot of issues.
Is he old, that guy McCann?
No, I think McCann's in the late 20s, maybe he's 30. There was another McCann you're thinking about. There was a catcher played for the Yankees.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is a different guy.
One, yeah,
he is a different guy. So, again, the Mets, the big question for the Mets and their ownership is, what do you do at the end of the season? Do you blow this up, you know, or do you patch it again, you know, come back and make one big signing or – what are you going to do? Cano's back next year. You know, what do you do with Cano next year? You know, you're going to keep Baez. You're going to go get, the Mets have a lot of questions. I personally would blow it up. Start from scratch, get some new players and a new manager.
Anybody that's going to be able to put it together from scratch.
Well, again, I don't think. Yeah. If I were the Mets, I'd go out and sign Theo Epstein, give him whatever he wants and hire Buck Showalter with the manager in waiting, and that's how I would start this team. Buck Showalter is a great manager for about 3 years. Buck Showalter's got to be in his mid-60s, 63, 64.
That is?
Yeah, he's not older than that. He's not much older than that. I would say I would have to look it up, but 63, 64, I would bet, If I was a Mets, but to me, if I'm the Mets, I give Theo Epstein, the guy turned around the Red Sox, turned around and won a World Series with the Cubs, and then I would go out there and bring Showalter in. See, Showalter's great for 3 years, and then he annoys everybody, and then you got to get rid of him. He's kind of like the Bill Parcells of baseball. You know, he'll do a great job. He'll change the culture, bring in good players. Teach him a winning game of baseball, and then he'll irritate everybody, and he's got to go. So that if Steve Cohen's listening, or if anybody knows Steve Cohen, tell him I said throw a fortune at Theo Epstein, get Showalter with a young guy who's going to be the future manager on his staff, and then turn those two guys loose, and I guarantee you three seasons, the Mets will be October darlings. I'm telling you.
Enough of these Mets. We've been talking about these Mets for far too long. They suck. They suck. They've sucked for years. Every year, this is going to be their year. This is going to be their year. I have other complaints.
You have other complaints?
I have other complaints.
You have complaints?
Yes.
Give me your complaints.
I have several different complaints that I want to add right here, right now. Mac and the Star Show.
Go ahead.
Okay. One.
Go ahead.
Barkley.
Oh, my God. Here we go.
Saquon Barkley.
Yeah.
What is the story with this guy? Is he in? Is he out? What?
Oh, if you saw today's clips, he was running routes. He's catching passes. He looked great. Now, is he ready for? Is he playing Sunday? No, he will not. He will not step on the field this Sunday. He's not. I don't believe he's gotten involved in any sort of the 11-on-11 stuff at these joint practices with the Patriots. And I will talk to you about the joint practices when I get a second, but. Do I think he's going to be ready for opening day? I do. I don't think he's going to be 20 carries, but I think he's going to be ready. And hey, he looks great. I mean, you know, Jeff, you know, until he steps on the field and he's being chased by a guy who weighs about 275 pounds, you're never going to know.
Well, I think the best thing for them to do is to put Barkley on the IR.
There we go.
All right. Put Barkley on the IR.
Uh-huh.
Put Daniel Jones on the waiver wire. Okay. And just shut this whole team down, please, before they do it themselves and embarrass themselves. I can't even talk about this.
Well, you're going to have to because now I'm going to talk about the Giants. And here's what I love about the Giants right now. Okay. So first off, I've been very leery and I've almost second-guessing my man Joe Judge on not playing Daniel Jones or any of the starters for that matter in the preseason. So after the first two games,
this is their last preseason game.
Correct. Right? Yeah, they played the shows. Yes.
And so, they haven't played anything.
Nah, I mean, I think Shepard might have played a couple of plays, but none of the offensive line is. I think the offensive line played about 12 plays, and what they did was they played him with Glennon because they want to give Glennon the chance to play in case Goffin Bay's got to get out there. So they want to give Glennon as much work as they can. So I thought it was a good spot. So, but no, none of the starters have played any real significant time at all, offense or defense. So, now it's turned out to be a good thing. Well, it is.
This year, you're getting the extra game.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think anybody really knows how to run their offense, their team this year. With COVID coming up and dealing with that, one less preseason game, one more regular season game, you don't know what to do. And I think that a lot of the teams have made the choice and said that they're pretty much going to sacrifice a regular season game or two and hope that their team could make up the difference.
I think to a certain extent, you're right, Jeff. I think what I've seen, and I understand a little better, are the joint practices, because what happens is they're getting the hitting in the joint practices, but it's controlled. And especially for the quarterbacks are not targets. You know, so the guys can come up and knock the ball out of their hands or tag them. But so you're getting the actual work in. The offensive lines are getting their work. The defensive lines are getting their work. And you're doing it in a controlled environment. So I've changed my focus on my thought process on it. And I like the joint practice thing. And we should see the offensive starters or the starters for the Giants this Sunday.
And look at what happened with the Jets.
Yeah.
Having a joint practice. Can't talk today.
Yeah.
They lost how many different guys this week? Two or three guys?
Well, don't forget, Vinnie Curry you lost, but he went out to a blood disorder. So
yeah, this is true.
Carl Lawson, you lost yet to an Achilles injury in one of the joint practices. And they lost the other linebacker, which, again, could have happened in a preseason game, could have happened in a practice, could have happened getting out of his locker.
But it did happen
right
at a preseason game.
That's
it
true.
It did happen at a joint practice preseason.
Okay.
So, you know, that has to be – and you're 100% right. I agree with you. You know, you just don't know what's going to happen. Are they going to, get hurt going to brush their teeth and scrub their toe?
Sure.
And, you know, that's it.
Yeah.
Be hampered for the rest of the season. You don't know.
Yeah.
But we do know this much. They went to a joint practice and they lost a couple guys.
Correct.
And a couple of them were going to be key contributors to the defense.
Carl Lawson's a big loss for the Jets. I have to be honest with you. That's a huge loss. Al Curry's a loss.
That's also the Jets' problem, too. They signed one solid defensive player in the offseason.
Yep.
Why not go after a second? Why didn't you go after better, defensive backs?
Yes.
They didn't. They only do so much. You know, I understand there's a lot of holes on this team. Don't get me wrong.
Yep.
And then you're talking about another top 10 draft pick. No matter what, they got a top 10 draft pick.
Well, let me I'll finish your thought, but remind me, because I heard something on WFEN the other day. One of the hosts were picking the Jets to win 10 games this year.
No.
Well, now here's my thing on the Jets. While I've heard nothing but praises for your young quarterback, everybody says he's looked great, especially moving with the football in his hand.
I remember hearing this about somebody else
too. No, I get it. Listen, you always got to temper it when it's the Jets. But the one knock that they've had this last couple of weeks is the offensive line has looked terrible against the other team's offensive for number one defensive lines. They look,
including Becton.
Yeah, and just going to bring it up, Jeff, great point. Becton has gotten ripped not only by the newspaper people, but his offensive coordinator has questioned him twice in the newspaper. So, you know, while I'm certainly not going to sit here and say Becton's a wasted draft pick, I'm just saying it seems like there's something there with Mekhi Becton that's not translated so far to a step forward in year two.
Yeah, something's going on. I from day one I said it. You're talking about a guy they drafted that was near 370 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now all of a sudden you're going to worry about his weight. It isn't like they said to this guy, listen, by the time February comes, we want you to lose. You know, from the end of the season, if we're done after week 17, we want you to lose by February 1st. You got to lose 20 pounds.
Right.
You know, that we're sending you home 20, 30 pounds lighter than you were last year at this time.
Right.
So that if you put on 30 pounds and we had you lose 20, then you're only up 10 from your playing weight.
Uh-huh.
But somebody like that, I mean, come on, dude. You don't weigh almost 400 pounds because of genetics. You weigh that much because you eat. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, and listen, he seems to have some sort of conditioning issues or motivation issue. I'm not sure. They just got Elijah Vera Tucker back. But the offensive line has been the one negative so far that I've heard out of camp. The reports have been that the rookie Moore, the receiver, has been had a great camp. Corey Davis has had a decent camp. And Zach Wilson's exceeded expectations so far. But listen, you're right.
Yeah, but like you like to say, exceeding expectations in what?
Yeah.
Not getting hit, not getting punched.
Listen, playing the other team's second string. Listen, I'm with you. All I can say is this. You know, you don't know. And that's always the case. Listen, the Jets have an interesting game, number one, okay? Carolina Panthers, Sam Darnold. So, you know, are you confident that the Jets are better than Sam Darnold and the Panthers? I think it's an interesting game. I think you'll learn a lot about the Jets. Again, it's game one of 17. It ain't the season. Win or lose, you know, there's 16 more to play. But I think it's an interesting game for the Jets. It's a game they should be at least competitive in.
Of course it is. But you want to know something? Yeah, you're going to be second-guessing yourself somewhat with this game because
why?
The quarterback you gave up is going to be facing the quarterback you use to replace him. That's one
thing. That's, yep. Okay?
Second of all, from what I've read about Donald, mm-hmm. it's not exactly like he's lighting it up down
there. Oh, no, not at all. Not at all.
You know, so that does make the Jets look a little bit better that they, you know, maybe got rid of a potential headache.
Oh, yeah.
Like he wasn't going to do dick on that team.
You were 100% right. You couldn't keep Sam Donald and then draft another quarterback. It would never have worked. A veteran guy who had some success, a Ryan Fitzpatrick or one of those kind of guys, you could have did it, but you're right. You could never have kept Sam Donald and drafted Zach Wilson and gone into camp like that.
No, because one, they're too close in age, way too close in age, and there's always going to be the thought that what happens if one falters.
Right.
So, no, you can't have one.
No, I agree. So, I mean, listen, we're going to get a lot more into the Jets in the next couple of weeks. Of course, the September 9th show, which is the opening day of the NFL, Cowboys and the Buccaneers, that'll be our show. We'll do all football for 90% of it. We'll go through the league. We'll make some picks. And we'll break down the Jets and Giants season. We'll go through their schedules together. And we'll come up with what we think the season is going to look like for the Jets and for the Giants. Again, for the Jets, listen, new coaching staff, new quarterback, but a lot of the same problems, Jeff. Offensive line issues. The Giants have 12 different defensive backs who can play in this league, it looks like, and the Jets can't put two on the field. I'm telling you. But the Giants, I'll tell you the first thing, the Giants have their issues. Is their offensive line up to game speed yet? Other than Blake Martinez, do they have another linebacker? Can they edge rush? You know, there's a lot. You know, Daniel Jones has got to step up in year three. Got to happen. Got to have a better season. You know, I'll tell you,
right,
Daniel Jones has to be a 3,800, 26-15 interception quarterback this year. Otherwise, it's almost a failure. Even if they win, because they're going to have a good defense, and that division sucks, and it's going to continue to suck. So, but, the Giants have their issues, the Jets have their issues, but September 12th, it all starts for real. This Sunday, the Giants come home, New England comes down, they play one good game, and the Giants starters should play, so we'll get a little bit of a dress rehearsal for the season. But I'm excited.
Yeah, it's right there.
Yeah. Right there. I know.
I see that you're not really wearing your Giant colors. Your head is blocking it. Your head is blocking it.
Listen, I bleed the blue, baby. I bleed the blue because that's my squad. That's my squad. There's no doubt. I am excited. Listen, do I think that we're going to take advantage of a weak division? Yeah, I think the Eagles suck. I think the Redskins are going to suck because they got Ryan Fitzpatrick, and Dak Prescott's got a half a wing.
Oh, stop!
Please.
Please.
I'm not buying it.
Are you supposed to be the expert here? What is
you're the expert. You're the expert. I'm not the expert.
I never claimed to be an expert.
Oh, you never claimed to be the expert. You never claimed to be the expert?
No.
Do I have to break out the text messages where you claim to be the expert?
No, I just claim that the Giants are going to suck.
Oh, my God.
I never say that they're you know, great and everything else. Never say that.
I don't think the Giants are going to be great. I think the Giants are going to be a good football team this year. I still think they're a year or two away, but I think if Barkley stays healthy and Jones progresses and the offensive line is as good as I think they're going to be, this team will win 9 or 10 games this year, and that's enough to win that division.
10 games.
I think the Giants can win 9 or 10 games this year.
Oh, my God.
I'm telling you. I think the Giants, because their division's bad. They'll get 6 wins in their own division.
I'm going to tell you quick what's going to happen to the Giants.
You want to make it quick? Is that what you're going to do?
Yes.
Please.
Yes. You ready?
Enlighten me, please.
Okay. First game, they're going to win the kickoff. They're going to elect to receive.
Okay.
Daniel Jones, they're going to take the ball. They're going to run the ball out when they should have downed it. They're going to get the ball out to the 4-yard line. Runner's going to get fucking killed at the 4-yard line. Daniel Jones and the team come out. They start on their own 4. Okay. Daniel Jones moves the team rather well, surprisingly, gets the Giants to their own 40-yard line, hands the ball to Saquon Barkley. He goes to do a spin move. He gets fucking pummeled. His knee spins around. You actually see his knee spin around inside his leg, and his career is done. Gives up the ball. Okay. The next offensive series,
mm-hmm.
okay, walking up to the line of scrimmage after the huddle, Daniel Jones fumbles the ball, and they didn't even give it to him yet. He kicks it over by accident. Okay. And three times, as he marches his team 7 yards on his first three downs, he fumbles every time. He also recovers, though. I'll give him that. He recovers. Okay? And then Gettleman just doesn't know what to do, and he puts out the wrong players. And next thing you know, they look by halftime, they're down by 35. That's my prediction for the Giants first game.
Hold on.
Listen to that. As the half man snores.
As you put our audience to sleep with your ridiculous take on the Giants season.
Put your audience to sleep with your ridiculous comments. What are the numbers coming out of Israel?
Oh, I didn't check today. Would you like me to check these numbers in Israel?
Yes. We need to find out what the numbers from Israel are.
Let's see. Can I do that while we're on the air is the question, Jeff.
Hold on.
Let's see if I can do that while we're on the air. We were a little lower last week than we had been, but not too much. No, we're back up to 7.72% of our audience is out of Israel, Canada, France, and Ukraine, coming in right after that. But 7.72% of the Hard Rock and Sports audience is still in the – we're still hovering in the 7.7, 7.8 area. So
we're under 8%, but still, yes. Nonetheless, 8% of our audience is coming out of Israel.
That's correct.
Wow.
Even with all the stuff going on. Again, remember, guys, Hard Rock and Sports, Jeff and Tom, you were here every Thursday night, 6:30 to 9:30. Again, starting last week or starting this past week, we're going to be featured on the SportsWire radio, which I thank Tom Bryce for. We'll be replayed a couple times a week, and stay tuned for more information on where you can find us and what days of the weeks and hours. But thanks to Tom for having us on. Of course, we're here every Thursday night. Next Thursday night, Kazem Sultan joins Jeff and I, coming back to have a little fun talking about his solo stuff. So we're looking forward to having him.
Coming in on video? Or
yes, he'll be coming in on video.
Nice, very nice.
So we'll have Kazem next Thursday night with us. The following Thursday will be our NFL show. And then that Sunday, it'll be the first week of the not-named Hard Rock and Sports Sunday football show that we – Jeff and I did a little bit of last year, but I didn't feel like I had the interest in it. So we'll do a little of that, and we'll be joined each week by our good friend John Mahefka, who, by the way, they're celebrating their 5-year anniversary of the big live stream concert this Saturday. So make sure you check out the RFL website for more information where you can find that. So congratulations to John and everybody at RFL Records for 5 great years. And we're looking forward to at least five more. And congratulations to our dear friend John Mahefka. So, Jeff, we should be getting into – I want to play the video the second video I have for the JWB band featuring Dave Weeks. And then hopefully we'll have our first caller, which should be Steve Barber. If not, we'll do a little more music and sports if Steve's here. If not, we'll fill it in. But I think we'll start the tribute, right? Unless you want to hold it till Steve shows up. Do you want to hold it till then?
Go ahead. Play what you're going to play.
All right. So let's play a little something from the JWB band. We're going to play Moonlight. This is, again, in tribute to Staten Island's own David Weeks, who passed away. Jeff will be handling, once Steve shows up, it's Jeff's gig. I'll just be filling in and working the controls. Again, if you guys are out there and you want to call in, excuse me, 347-826-9934 is the number. If you do want to come on in a video chat, the private message either Jeff or myself will send you the link, and you can pop up and you can absolutely have a few minutes to talk about Dave. But let's start it off, like we said, at 8 o'clock, a little tribute to Mr. David Weeks. Moonlight from the JWB band.
this day. Moonlight, looks as though you're here to stay. Looks as though you're here to stay. Moonlight chasing after day. Moon on the rise, though the night is on the way. Though the night is on the way. It's a hard road that's tearing me apart. Here comes the night, the storm begins to come, such a blinding light, moonlight saves my life again, moonlight saves my life again, moonlight brings me back from the dead.
And that was Moonlight from the JWB Band featuring Mr. David Weeks. We are paying a little tribute here tonight, right here on the Hard Rockin' Sports Show. Jeff and Tom, right here until about 9:30 tonight. Jeff, I have to tell you, some really good music there. I love Dave's guitar sound. I only got to see him play once. And I have to admit, it was late in the night on my way out the door of a benefit for your over at Mother Pugs. But Dave sounded like a great player. I mean, do you have any recollections of seeing him play live that you can give us a little something on?
Yeah, a couple times. I seen Dave play in the studio, Island Music, on Bay Street across from John Panino's when I worked there.
Mm-hmm.
Him and his band used to put a video up every Thursday night. They would put videos up of them playing.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, from Phoenix Studio. I actually one night left the Hard Rockin' Sports Band early to go play. I tried out for that band.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and John Johnson, their longtime bass player, left for whatever reason, and I went and tried out. And Dave said, you know, like, the guys like you playing and everything else, but, you know, John contacted us and he wants to come back. And I remember telling him, I was like, well, listen, this is, if you guys take John, you know, I said, it's just how it is, you know what I mean? And that's what ended up happening. They ended up going with John. So you can't get mad if a band is going to get back together, especially those guys. John and Dave played with one another for, you know, about 7 million years. They used to have dinosaurs come to their show. They played together for so long. And you can't hold anything back from them for that. You know,
no, definitely
mean?
Not. No, definitely not.
So if that's what it was, that's what it was. But I knew more. I used to see more of Dave at work. And he would come in and talk to me at work and tell me what was going on, what shows they had, and what was going on. And as far as them, you know, recording their album and, you know, like how they would learn songs. And, you know, it was just nice to talk to Dave. It was nice when he came in because we would talk music of all kinds. You know, Dave was a little bit older than we were, so he wasn't strictly into classic rock, but he also, you know, wasn't just metal either. He was in a little bit in between, a little bit of what we didn't listen to, you know what I mean?
Right.
So it was cool. It was cool.
So. Did you take a look at the phone number I just put on your screen? Do you recognize that any by any chance?
No, but I would pick them up because I don't know who it may be.
All right, so let's.
It would be somebody.
All right, so let's take a shot at it. We got a caller on the Hard Rockin' Sports Show again. If you guys are out there and you want to and you're listening, you want to call on the phone. It's 347-826-9934 to talk to Jeff and I, and maybe talk a little bit about Dave Weeks or any of the topics we've talked about tonight. Let's see who's on the line with us right now. It's a 570-982 number. Caller, you're on the air with Hard Rockin' Sports.
Hey, Tommy. Hey, Jeff. It's Pete Begley. I appreciate the show you're doing tonight for my friend Dave.
Pete, I thought I recognized your phone number. I wasn't sure, but Pete, thank you for calling in. It's nice to hear your voice. I hope you're doing well.
How are you, Pete?
Oh, thank you. I'm doing good, Jeff. Thank you both so much for taking time to remember a really good man. I know Dave. We went to Curtis High School together, so it's going back quite some time, and played together, a lot through the years. But I haven't lived on Staten Island in a long time, so I hadn't seen him. And Jeff, I know you guys did the benefit recently, but I gig on weekends, and with the bars in New York not closing at 4 these days, I didn't have a chance to go see him because everything wrapped up before I could possibly get there. I couldn't get to the island much before midnight on a Saturday, so I didn't get to see him, and now it hurts all the more because he's just an old friend. You know how it is, we connect with friends on Facebook we haven't seen that you can't wait to be in a room with again. And, it's just sad to not have that opportunity. My condolences to his wife and children. They're just going through unspeakable pain right now. This is a shock to everyone. We all say Chin Such was a nice guy when, after an untimely death. But in the case of Dave Weeks, he really was extraordinarily nice. And there's just, you won't find a person who can say a bad thing about him. And it wasn't a show that just the man just didn't, he wasn't capable of maliciousness or contempt for another human. It just truly modeled the way I wish I could be.
That's saying something, Jeff. Good.
I don't think he had it in him to be a mean person. And when we got the phone call, I was in the office the other day, and the phone call came in, and the guy that was speaking to my boss and told my boss, breaking the news to him, you know, said that this is a shame that he wouldn't hurt a fly. And I never once in all the years that I know Dave ever heard of anybody having an issue with him. You know, everybody got along with him. The guy just, he showed respect, and he got respect back. And he was just one of these people that just a good person, like Pete said. And, you know, it's a real shame. Man, wow. It really is.
Pete, can you go back a little bit or tell me a little something on Dave the player? I got to play a little music tonight, and you know, a great guitar sound. Can you tell us a little something about Dave the musician? Maybe going back to, you know, when you first heard him play, and some of the things maybe you've done together or saw him do.
Sure. Yeah. In our high school days, there was just so much intermingling among players. So, you know, just sitting in with this band, sitting in with that band, hey, let's do something. So a lot of that happened, and he was always like a really good player that, you know, you're like, this is great. And he's, you know, he had big hands. He's a tall guy, a gentle giant, but hard rock. Loved Rush and the progressive stuff that I liked, was open to any style of music. And, you know, not long after I became a stick player and so, you know, kind of wasn't as enmeshed in that whole hard rock world. But believe it or not, Dave, you know, asked me to play his wedding. You know, what an honor. And I did. Of course, it was wonderful. She's got a lovely bride. I wasn't. You know how sometimes you guys both feel it. You see a gig or you hear a tape of yourself from 20, 30 years ago, and you're just, oof, I hope no one hears this. You know, you cringe.
Yes.
You know. So to think back on, you know, him, offering me to play his wedding, guys, I wasn't the player I am today at the time. So it's quite a humbling memory, you know. But speaking of memories to tie into Jeff, you know, growing up, I'm sure we all spent non-sober nights in Washington Square Park. Doing things that we don't want to talk about live radio. But I can remember being there and seeing Dave Weeks working in Washington Square Park and thinking, I can't believe it. I know someone that's got authority in this place. I felt like the mayor, you know, just because I knew someone that had the keys to the doors I wasn't allowed into. But he was always gracious about it. He didn't throw his weight around, you know, look the other way at what me and my friends were doing. It was just, you know, a terrific feeling, and it was just no big thing with him. Nothing he ever accomplished or was ever, he had no ego, you know, He just was always a fine, humble gentleman. Went to his guitar playing, went to his philosophy, his job. And, you know, we got to – Facebook is so great because you get to reconnect with friends you didn't think you'd ever see again, basically.
Sure.
And I tend to be a little bit, you know, outspoken on Facebook to the chagrin of many that love me. But he was always, you know, encouraging and not combative, even if he didn't agree. But he agreed with a good amount of what I put out. I quote the Bible every day, and he was, you know, he was a believer, and that's the most comforting thing on this sad Thursday night. But yeah, just a fine gentleman all the way around, and the world is a lesser place without him.
It's a shame, man. It really is. It's sad.
Yeah, absolutely. Tom and Jeff talking with our good friend Pete Bagley, who hasn't been on since we did, I think, the Neil Peart tribute a year or so back. So nice to have Pete come on, and we appreciate him giving us a little insight to his relationship and his knowledge of Dave Weeks. So we're happy to have that. And, Dave, and Neil, Pete, you bring up a good message. It's something that Jeff and I talk about a lot. And luckily for us, we've kind of had the ability to reconnect with the guys we grew up with, and we get to spend a lot of time together. And we always talk about not taking for granted, you know, hanging out and spending time together and making some more memories other than the juvenile ones we had as children. So I think your message, Pete.
Yes, the juvenile ones we're making as adults.
True. Yeah, there's a lot of juvenile messages. We still do. If I show you the text messages I get from Jeff on a daily basis, you know what I'm talking about, Pete. But Pete, your message is right. You know what? We don't know when the good Lord's going to knock on the door and call us home. So we have to take advantage of our days here and definitely get out there and celebrate and spend time with family, friends, and do the things we enjoy. So your message is well received on this end.
Thank you, Tom. And you know, you mentioned an influential drummer that died the last time I called in. And, boy, Charlie Watts, you know, on the same day as Dave, is you know, ironically, was just a terrific drummer. And he's a great loss in the world of rock and roll. And another fine gentleman. You can't say that about, you know, too many rock stars, but Charlie Watts was one of them.
You know, Jeff and I are not huge Stones fans. You know, we respect the fact their place in history and all that. But as I would say, a qualified musician, where is Charlie Watts as a drummer? Was he simply just like an in the pocket drummer? Was he a great drummer? Was he one of those guys?
Nobody was going to confuse him with fucking Neil Peart.
Well, but again, there's different styles, but that doesn't mean that they're lesser drummers. You know, give me a second or two on Charlie Watts and his ability. You know, most people know the band. They know obviously Mick Jagger. They know Keith Richards. To a lesser extent, they know Ronnie Woods. But nobody really, really knows, at least I don't, Charlie Watts.
Yeah, Charlie Watts is very hard to play like because he's got an unorthodox technique, but he's of a jazz mindset where, hey, the drums aren't the primary thing here. Let me just keep everyone together and be the support and the foundation everyone can build on. And the Stones, the way Keith Richards plays guitar is very he'll knock you off the beat if you're not paying attention. He will just drive you into a ditch. You got to be on your toes with a guitarist like Keith Richards. He's very unpredictable, his rhythms. And Watts was the perfect complement to that. You know, you couldn't compare him to a Neil Peart, but I'll tell you this. Charlie Watts was ready to go out on the road at age 80. Neil Peart had to retire. You know, he couldn't physically play anymore at, what, about 62, 63, I think. And I love Peart. You know, Rush is one of my favorite bands. But a lot of respect for Charlie Watts. And to hold down, you know, the drum seat in a band that has had, you know, top five albums for 55 years. No one's held a drum seat longer than Charlie Watts, and that speaks volumes. But he did a ton of jazz albums. I follow a good amount of jazz pages on Facebook, and those guys are talking about him with deep respect for what he did for the art form and for his playing ability. So, yeah, he was a giant of a player, and he's an unreplaceable and a true gentleman.
Yeah, we keep losing the you know, Jeff brought up a great point today. You know, we lose these guys, and yet there's nobody to fill the void. You know, in sports we talk about, you know, Jeter retires, and you think what's going to happen next, and here comes Aaron Judge. You know, Peyton Manning retires, and you know the next group of great quarterbacks come around. But nobody's out there replacing these Giants that we're losing. Nobody's replacing Neil Peart. Nobody's replacing Charlie Watts. You know, that's the sad part of it, Pete, for us music fans.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. It doesn't seem like there's a lot of bands that become household names and stay household names for more than 10 years, let alone 20, 30, 40, or 50. Very few bands are able to achieve that anymore. And I think one of the reasons is their style tends to be limited. You know, the Stones did stretch out. They would do, you know, gut bucket blues and strange country and disco with Miss You and all that. They didn't turn their nose up at all. They would try out new things. And Charlie Watts was there for all of it, keeping it legitimate, keeping it true and with integrity. And that says an awful lot. But, yeah, the newer crop of stuff, there's always good songs. There's always new songs I like. But there's not too many bands that I like that have had, you know, a 10, 15, 20-year career. And I wish there was more of that.
There's nobody out right now that's going to hit numbers like that and be around for time like that. I don't see it.
Yeah.
In the day of the single, they'd rather push a single and get a couple singles out of a band than to push a band and get a couple albums and good albums out of them. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah. I agree. It's very difficult because even if a band puts out, you know, great album after great album, they have to tour. And once you start touring, the record companies get a lot more control over you and just try to pigeonhole you into a box. I saw something on the WNEWFM page, and it said, you know, back in the day, WNEWFM would have just thrown out their playlist for that day, talked about Charlie Watts, had old stories, played nothing but the Stones for hours. But K-Rock, you know, won't do that. It's a formula, and that's it. So you don't have that personable kind of a radio station and DJ in your life today when you're just driving in the car. And that's a great loss.
No, it is. And it's a lost art form that people don't recognize anymore. And you're right. You don't have that, you know, place where you could turn to when you lose a Charlie Watts, where you could get that kind of, you know, maybe the Eddie Trunk of the world is probably the last guy.
Not even on that, dude, because when Charlie Watts died, we were at work and we had the radio on. And they weren't even playing any Stone stuff. They weren't playing anything from the Stones. And that's not, a lot of that has to do with the phones nowadays. Because if you want to hear it, you just stream it onto your phone.
That's true.
You don't have to sit and listen to the radio. Once the radio tells you, well, you know, so-and-so died, Charlie Watts died, like, oh, shit, let me go on my phone here. And, we got a whole bunch of Stone stuff right here. I don't have to listen to them play a couple songs from the Stones and then move it along. I could listen to the Stones the rest of the day if I want.
I think like the art of rock and roll and music to some extent, I think radio was that buffer back in the day where when somebody like this was lost, you would turn in to your favorite DJ and he would be playing songs and interviewing people and giving you stories on that artist. And I think that's Pete, you brought it up. It's a great, it's a lost art, and I miss it. I'm a big radio guy. And I grew up listening to the radio, and I miss that intimacy that the DJ could hold you for 2, 3, 4 hours at a clip just with some words and a little bit of music.
Yeah, I Carol Miller, you get a little taste of that with Get the Lead Out.
Yeah.
You know, 8 o'clock. But
yep.
Just a little snippet, 15 minutes, and then it's done. It's back to corporate radio.
Yeah.
I kind of feel bad for the younger generation that they don't, there's not a DJ that they say, oh man, Scott Muni's on, there's Dennis Elsis, he's going to be great, I want to hear the Nightbird, Allison Steele.
Yeah.
Like, they don't grow up with this. Spotify's just never going to give you that.
Yep.
So it's, but you know, hey,
technology keeps moving. There's a lot to be thankful. I'm looking at both of you guys on a tiny little phone while we're speaking. We're so blessed with the technology we have, so I don't want to sound gloom and doom about it.
No,
but I do miss that intimacy, you know, kind of backstage knowledge.
It's always great to have the technology. We'll all say that how we did without it, but, you know, you do miss. There are certain things from my childhood, and radio is one of them, Pete. So, but
you know what? Yeah. That's the big thing. That's the problem now with radio. Nobody wants to put on a radio and hear somebody talk. So all they got to do is listen to their phone, and they could listen nonstop instead of listening to having a DJ captivate you for hours, like you said a few minutes ago. Now you don't need that. You just put your phone on or whatever, you know, satellite radio, whatever you got, you know, Alexa, whatever, Apple Play, whatever, and just nonstop music. You never have to have anybody bother you again while you're listening to it, but you're paying for it. The radio was free.
Yeah.
You know, and you're right. It's a lost art.
Oh, it really is. Yep, no doubt. But Pete, listen, we thank you. You know, you're welcome anytime. We love having you. I love reading your posts. I pay attention to you all the time. But you're a good friend, and we appreciate you giving us some time on Dave during this little tribute we're trying to do. And of course, sir, you know, we'd love to have you back on anytime just to talk, you know, music, sports, or the day's news. You know, you're always welcome with our show.
Tommy and Jeff, thank you both so much. The Yanks are doing great. I'm happy to say that, to get a little sports plug in. Dave Weeks, God rest his soul, a good and righteous man, gone to a better place, and my condolences to his loved ones. Thanks for having me on, fellas. God bless you for what you do.
Thanks, Pete. Thank you, and God bless you as well.
Okay.
That's Pete Begley, Staten Island legend, Jeff. I don't care what anybody tells me. That guy's a Staten Island legend.
And, he's a good guy. Yes. One of the comments that Chris Lang left, that's my boss from work, and I totally forgot this until he wrote it, that Dave did build and repair guitars. I used to talk to him about that.
Wow.
But more than that, he worked for DiMarzio.
Oh, did he really?
A company, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
That Dave worked for. I remember that in the past. And he also told me stories about when he used to tour. He was on tour. I just don't know who he was with. I don't know if Chris remembers.
Well, there's actually somebody on the phone we can ask that question.
All right. Well.
Well, I think if the phone number's written, I got it right. I think this is Steve, right? Steve Barber. So I'm going to pick up Steve and get him on. I think that Steve is a longtime drummer and friend of Dave Weeks. So Jeff, I'm going to turn it over and Steve.
Right,
Steve.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Hello, Tom and Jeff, welcome to the Hard Rockin' Sports Show, and thanks for calling in.
Yes, it's great to be here, and you know we miss our guitar, my guitar player, the great Dave Weeks, who I was fortunate enough to play with for over 25 years. But yeah, like you said, he's with God, and that's what's important, you know. So, but we miss him.
It's a shame, man. I know that you guys played together a long time. How did you guys end up getting together and starting the band? It's been a while, but
I mean, are we talking about the latest or when we first started? Me, Dave, and John.
Tell us from day one what happened. How did you get together?
See, Dave knew this. He had better information than I did, but I was like 18 years old, coming out of high school, and I don't know how he found out about me. But one day it was through maybe an ad or something. And we started practicing. I was 18. We were practicing on Bay Street, and then John came in, and we formed the Alliance, and you know, and then we went different projects. But you know, we always had time to play, and you know, I think I was like either 18 or 19, and you know, and Dave and John were great. I mean, Dave was just an amazing player, an amazing guy, and you know, I loved working with him. So he was a great guy.
Yeah, with the music, like being that Dave was a little bit older than like me and you, I know I'm closer in age to Dave than you were. We discussed that earlier today. He wasn't really a metal guy, but he wasn't a classic rock guy. What would you say like his forte was? Like, what was he, more of a hard rock guy to you? Was he more of a classic rock guy? He seemed to play anything he wanted.
Oh, no. I mean, he was, like I said, he was a brilliant musician. I mean, when I first started with them, I mean, you know, Jeff, you know this, we were into Rush and ELP and Genesis, and yes, that's who I was into. And then Chick Corea and stuff like that, you know, Return to Forever and Avicii Orchestra. But then when I started playing with him, he would tell me about Michael Schenker. He would tell me about Judas Priest, Deep Purple. You know, he was a big Blackmore guy. He was also a big Schenker guy. He loved Michael Schenker. So, I mean, they introduced that to me in a different way, in a new way of looking at, you know, how a band is. And, you know, like I said, he taught me a lot, Jeff. He really did, as far as the rock and roll heavy side. Yeah.
I had, you know, talks with him at work, and he would come see me at work sometimes on a Sunday when it was quiet. And we'd spend some time talking, and you could talk music with Dave for weeks, literally, pun intended there.
Yeah.
You know, he just had so much music in him. It was unbelievable. And we played a couple of the songs from your album. And what was it like to record with him? Was he like a perfectionist and want to make sure
right? You know? Oh, no. He was 100% professional. But like I said, a great attitude. I mean, we really had fun doing that album. And when he came in, when we did the basic tracks, I mean, I think we did it in one take. And then he came in and he did the guitar, you know, he did the leads and everything. I mean, he sounded brilliant. And it was really funny. You know, he used to say, like, you know, I serve it up and I give it to you. It's up to you what you guys do with it. I mean, that was like one of his famous sayings. But, you know, but that's like I used to call it Dave-ism, you know. But, you know, he had such a great attitude. I mean, Jeff, you know, he had such a great attitude, a zest for life. You know, like I said, a great man, great musician, and a great friend. You know, and it's gonna be tough for me and Mario right now, and John. So it's gonna be a tough road.
No, I was just gonna say again, we're on the air, Hard Rock and Sports, Jeff and Tom, talking, doing a little tribute to Staten Island's own Dave Weeks, who suddenly passed away this week. And we offer our condolences to Dave's friends and family, bandmates. We're going to have Mario and Dave's daughter on in a few minutes. But right now, Steve Barber, his longtime friend and drummer, giving us a little something. Dave, do you have a story that kind of epitomizes Dave? You know, kind of like something that maybe people wouldn't know, a little background story that you can give us to kind of sums up who Dave Weeks was as a person, a musician, your friend?
Well, I mean, what gets me is, like, once again, with music, and Jeff might know this, man, when he was working with the Parks, you know, this one story he told me recently, like maybe a year ago, about when he used to work at Washington Square Park back in the 80s, he used to pump into Jaco Pastorius, the bass player. And I'm like, wait a minute, you mean to tell me, I'm like, Dave, you mean to tell me you were hanging out with Jaco Pastorius? He goes, yeah, Steve, you know, he used to come up and try to get money for me. And here's the funny story. He goes, yeah, and I'm still waiting for the 20 bucks he owes me. So, I mean, I'm like, Dave, I don't think you're going to get it, Dave. You know, but,
you know,
I mean, listen, guys.
The story's,
you know,
funnier than the $20, you know what I mean? You'd rather not get the $20.
You know, but
$20, he bought himself a great story about that.
I mean, just the fact that, you know, he hung out with probably one of the greatest bass players that ever, you know, walked on this earth. But, you know, he told me that story. And I think he also told me about an Elvis story. I mean, there was so many things that, you know, I mean, we did more laughing than playing, me and Dave. I mean, you know, so. But the Jaco Pastorius story was great. That was really awesome.
Yeah, I would say that's got to be a classic. I never ever heard that one. I mean, he would come in, and most of the times when he talked about stuff, he would, you know, tell me about some old shows that he did and talk about equipment that he was going to use or what he wanted to get and everything else. And then he did tell me when you guys were recording the album, you know, like what was going on. He goes, yeah, we were recording the album and it's going well. But, you know, he never really talked about himself as a player.
Yeah.
He had a lot of pride.
Very humble. very humble
in the band with you guys. He really did, man. He loved talking about the band more so than anything about himself.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So,
yeah, absolutely.
He looked upon you guys with a lot of respect, I'll tell you that much.
Well, I mean, he, like I said, I've been playing with him and John for over 25 years. And, you know, obviously you're going to learn things and, you know, you're going to challenge one another and you're going to try and play better and better. But I'm a better musician because of him. I mean, plain and simple. I mean, because he would be like, he would turn around, like, you know, he would play something, I would play something, we would feed off each other. But it was like, you know, it was like we knew at a certain point, we knew where we were as musicians. We knew where to go. And Dave was, I used to call him the maestro because he used to, like, you know, dictate the tempos and everything. And but, you know, it was a great unit, guys, and it was a pleasure playing with him, you know, real pleasure.
Yeah, I got the chance to play with him once. I played with you guys once at Future Star a couple years ago, and he was really
great.
To play with.
It was great.
He was really cool about things too.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and here's another one for you guys. I mean, he had a famous saying, like, you know, because, you know, when you play, you want to make a little bit of money and stuff like that. But he always used to say, he goes, Steve, my drummer, it's about playing for the people. It's about playing for the people. It doesn't matter if there's 2 people in there or 2 million people. It's about playing for the people. So that was him. I mean, you know, that was, you know, I mean, like I said, I mean, but Mario is going to have some funny story for you guys too, being the new guy, so to speak. But you know, you know, like, you know, Rush was saying Neil Peart was the new guy. Well, you know, Mario's the new guy. So
Mario's he's waiting on deck with Dave's daughter. So we'll get them up in a second or two. But
all right, Kelsey. Kelsey, yes.
Yeah. So they're waiting on deck. But see, listen, I want to say thank you. We really appreciate you taking a few minutes of your time tonight to come on and you know, pay tribute to your friend. You know, you know your words mean a lot, you know, more so than we could probably put into it. So I say thank you. I'll let Jeff finish it up.
Yep. No problem. Thank you, Tommy.
We can say other than thank you, man. I know it was a rough week for you guys and his family. I know that Thursday night you guys would be in the studio, if I'm correct, rehearsing. So it's it's a sad thing, man. I feel bad for him. I really do.
Well, I mean, you know, Jeff, we're at some point we are going to continue on because Dave would want us to do that. And, you know, we're going to continue to play music for you guys and come and see us. Come and check us out. I mean, in a couple of months, you know, I mean, but, you know, Dave would want us to continue to play, and that's what we're going to do.
Yeah, I would agree with you. And again, we played a couple songs earlier, and it was really great music. And again,
thank you.
I'll say thank you from both of us. We really appreciate it. Our condolences to you and everybody else out there. And you know, again, keep doing what you guys are doing. I'm sure, like you said, I'm sure Dave would want that.
All right, guys. God bless. Have a good night.
Okay, that's Steve Barber saying good night. Thank you very much, Steve.
Good, Steve.
Drummer for the band JWB. And you know, Jeff, it's universal. I'm sure you're not going to get anybody on here who isn't going to feel the way that you and Steve and Pete Bagley, and I'm sure Mario is going to give us now. And you know, I think we'd all want that. You know, if it was our turn, we'd all want this nice you know, nice things to be said. But it seems like Dave was just a genuine nice guy.
Best word to describe him is gentleman, man. The guy was just a nice guy. I don't think he ever came in and had a bad word to say about anybody, no matter who it was. The guy was, you know, it wasn't like when you seen him coming, like, oh, God, here he comes. Here he comes again. No, it was never like that. You know, it was like you seen him, hey, Dave, what's going on? And he'd stay and he'd talk to you for a while. And, you know, it was always about music. And then he'd be like, oh, I got to go, guy. I'll see you later. And then off he'd go. And, you know, just a genuinely nice guy, man. That's all you could say.
All right,
how you doing, Bonnie?
Let's get to Mario and Kelsey. But guys, remember, it's Hard Rock and Sports. Jeff and Tom, we're here every Thursday night, 6:30 to 7 to 9:30, through Facebook and YouTube. We're also on the radio, and of course, this show will be repeated on SportsWire, the network. Thank you to Tom and everybody at Hard at SportsWire. That's at sportsanarium.com/player. What the hell is that symbol? Jesus Christ. Exclamation point. I'll put it up on the website. But this show will be replayed on Sports Wires Network probably Monday night. You can also find this on our YouTube page, Spotify. You heard some music from the JWB band on the show. Thank you for Mario and everybody for letting us play their music. And let's not wait any longer. Let's get Mario Ortiz and Dave's daughter, Kelsey, on with Jeff and Tom on the Hard Rockin' Sports Show. Hey, guys.
Hi.
First, let me start by saying to both of you, Kelsey and to Mario, our deepest sympathy and condolences to your family, Kelsey, on the loss of your dad. Mario, to your friend and bandmate. I'm going to turn this over to Jeff, but I just want to say we couldn't be sorrier, and thank you for allowing us to do this tonight and coming on the show with us.
Absolutely. I feel an honor that you guys wanted to do this as well, because my father had a heart of gold and gives a shirt off his back to anyone. There's no one like him in this world. I've never met another individual as kind-hearted, caring, and compassionate about anyone, even a stranger on the street. He would just go, "My friend, how are you doing today?" and stuff like that. And it's still a shock right now. I was just talking to him on Sunday. His birthday was last week, and he was telling me Sunday, he goes, "Yeah, tomorrow I'm on the office. I'm putting into retirement." He was so excited, and I can't believe this is really happening.
Yeah.
Man, that's a shame. I feel bad for him. You know, it's horrible to hear. When we were at work and we got the phone call, it was, you know, very sad. But, you know, let's try to focus on him for a few minutes and try to keep your mind off of it for a little bit. And, let's just start off and get right into it. What was it like to have a dad that played in bands like that? You know, you had to look up to him. I don't know if you were into that kind of music and everything, and if he was learning stuff, did he ever say, "Hey, come listen to this. Tell me what you think of that"?
Me and my father had a very special bond when it came to music. He introduced me. He always was introducing me to new stuff all the time. We always, you know, we listened to the classics, listened to new stuff. We would sit there. We would have our cup of coffee in the morning before we go to work. We'd have a cup of coffee, smoke a cigarette, listen to WSOU, listen to what was coming out on the radio and stuff. And he instilled in me and my brothers, I have two younger brothers, a love of music. And he never said, "Oh, I want you guys to play instruments and stuff." It was more of like trying to guide us. I was a woodwinds expert. I went to college for music education. So I really cherished those phone calls with him where we would sit there and talk about theory for hours. Like, we'd be listening to the radio together, and we'd be talking about this chord change, that chord change. He came to every show, and my brothers also both played, too. My middle brother, Zachary, he played the clarinet, and my youngest brother, Ian, he played the saxophone, clarinet, and he took after me with the oboe as well, because my main instrument was the oboe. And me and him were just always having deep conversations about music and theory behind it and stuff. And I would give him my analysis for college too. And I'd say, "All right, this is what we're working on in class. I see this, that, and the other thing with these chord changes. What do you see?" And we'd like build off these kind of things and always like sit on and stuff. And he had our dog Murray, who he was very, very close with. And, it would always be me, him, and Murray sitting in the basement. He has a room in the basement that had he had a stereo system he actually built himself while he was working the garbage truck for the Parks Department. He found all these pieced it together, surround sound, record player, cassette player, all this kind of stuff. And me, him, and Murray would sit in the basement, and we'd listen and play. We'd talk. We'd have a cup of coffee, smoke a cigarette, and just catch up and stuff. And he was a phenomenal person, a phenomenal musician. You'd never hear him say that, because, you know, his thing was, "Well, you know, you just gotta keep practicing, you gotta keep working at it." And I would say, "No, Dad, you're really amazing. You're so talented." "No, I there's still stuff I have to learn. There's still stuff I have to work on. you know, a musician never stops practicing, learning their craft and stuff. And I took all those lessons to heart as well, because I was a musician myself. I was going to college for music, and it was a special bond that we had over those kind of things. And I'm going to miss it tremendously.
At least you have some good memories of your dad and having something to bond over him with music. That's a great thing. But Mario, a quick question for you. What was it like to, when you were writing songs for your album, writing with somebody like Dave? You hear some of the guitar licks that he played. He was a phenomenal guitar player. Did you feel intimidated trying to write lyrics to his songs or what?
Honestly, well, here's the thing with them is they were together for a long time before I came around. They found me. I remember I was doing the show at the Curly Wolf one night. Well, it wasn't my show. I was just guesting. And all of a sudden, these two guys walk in, and I forgot what song it was. I think it had been the end of Mr. Crowley. And I went in the back. You know, I do the song, and then I ran in the back to just, you know, have a cigarette at the time when I smoked. And all of a sudden, these two guys come out, John, and then there was Dave, who was this tall guy, you know, tall guy. Now, I wasn't intimidated by his playing. I was intimidated by his size when I first met him. This guy was huge.
Yeah.
So they come out in the back and tell me that they have a band, and they want me to come down and try out and whatever. And I wasn't expecting Dave to be as kind as he was when I first met him. Like, he just came up to me and
he was intimidating like, man, but that smile,
he's the definition of the gentle giant. Like, you don't get any more
everybody has said that so far, and I've seen so many people say that about him. They call him the gentle giant.
Yeah
it's his heart over the thick of people.
Yeah, so when they told me to come down to the studio, I thought they were you know, kidding with me, because when I got there, they weren't in the room that they said they were going to be in. I went in and I said, yeah. So I take the bus all the way down to Phoenix Studios, and I get there, and I'm like, I'm looking for Dave Weeks. I said, you know, I was told to come here. This is 5 years ago, 6 years ago. And they're like, oh, no, we don't have anybody here by that. I was like, damn it. I was like, these guys had me on. They were just joking with me, like making me come all the way over here. Next thing you know, I go outside. I'm getting ready to call a cab because it started to rain. And I was like, all right, I'm not taking the bus back home. All of a sudden, the door swings open of Phoenix Studios, and out comes Dave with a cigarette in his mouth. He's like, Mario. He's like, buddy, we're waiting for you in there. He's like, I didn't know you were here. I told you to call. I was like, I tried calling. I said, nobody answered. I was like, you know. So, I mean, that night when I was going to try out for the band, it was more like an acceptance thing, because once I left there that night, they would just, like, it was exactly what I wanted it to be, and they told me the original songs they did, and all the songs that you hear on the album, those are all songs that they told me, like, that they did. They had them recorded once already. Some of them were recorded for the first time, because on the cassette that I have.
I have a cassette, yeah, too. When I was, Steve and John and my father, Steve and John were at my first birthday party. Let's put it that way. And I vividly remember the night when they met you at the Curly Bowl.
Yeah.
And my father was like, this kid has an amazing voice. We need to get him in the band. They were so, so excited to work with you.
He always told me that whenever we used to do like the set list and all that kind of stuff, I used to say, Dave, I said, you know, I want to make sure that everything sounds good. I was like, you know, I want to make sure that you guys are all right with the set. That was the number one thing when it came to them, and why I loved working with them so much was because they were so easy to work with. There's some places that are like, no, we don't want to do this. So, Dave was like, listen, you have the voice, you make the set list. You know, yeah, we'll play. He's like, but you're in charge of that. He's like, we'll practice them, we'll have it all set, but you do the set list. And but when it came to recording the album, back to you, the question, because I could go on forever with Dave, because we, you know, we did You're on Your Own Tonight, which is a song off the album. I had those lyrics for years, and it just, I told the guys, I said, they're like, do you have any original lyrics? I said, yeah, I'll bring one of them in. Because like I said, they had all those songs already. We were just trying to remake them into more, because they were very like, they're different. The songs that are on the album now, the original versions of them are so different that when Dave and John brought me in, they were like, you know, we need to make it more metal kind of sounding, like rock, because that's my voice. I like the, you know, bring it up. So they reworked all those songs and made them into something so much more powerful. And then You're on Your Own Tonight, I said, this is what I wanted to sound like, something like this. I told Dave, and I think I went to his house one time, and we worked on it for like one time there. But then once we got back to the studio, it sounded absolutely nothing like what I wanted it to sound like. But it sounded better than I expected. Like, he followed some of what I said, but he's like, oh, and this I want to put this here. And I was like, whoa. Like, what you said you wanted it to sound like, Dave had the way of making it that way. And that's the one thing I can say is not only one thing, but I'll regret it, that I won't be able to work with the ideas with him again, because, you know, he had a way of just knowing exactly what I was talking about. Like, you know, I mean, we shared a birthday, so that had to have been August 13th gene or something, you know?
Musicians and you get to that click. I mean, I played for years, and when you find people that you click with, that you could just, like, you don't even have to look at them, you could just play. It could be the first time you play a song, and like, we did what we had to do, right? Everybody has to follow us, you know. We're good, and that's what happens. So I can see that you having that with Dave, man. It happens, and when it happens, it's one of the best things that you can ever feel.
And of course, you know, there was like ups and downs, but every band has them and all that kind of stuff. But when I came to it, like, you know, Dave always said, he's like, you know, he's like, man, he's like, you know, whatever the case is, he's like, listen, bro, he's like, what? He's like, as long as you want to keep doing this, he's like, I'll be doing it with you. And he's like, you want to do a show? You want to go to the studio? He's like, I'll always be here, you know, ready to go and stuff like that. He's like, you know. So, and he really was, honestly. I mean, something that was so unexpected, and, you know, nothing prepares you for something like that, but he was all the way till the end. We just did a show, a month ago. So, and we weren't going to do that show. We weren't going to do it. And I talked to Dave on the phone, and I said to him, I was like, I really don't know what to do. I said, you know, I was like, at the time with the thing going on, I said, we don't have anybody to do this right now, so maybe we shouldn't do it, we'll wait. And he's like, no, he's like, you know, he's like, we'll figure it out. So then I asked my friend to come in and play, and the way it all worked out was just so weird to me. I feel like it was meant to be that we did that show, because if I didn't do that show with him and knew that something like this happened, and I looked back and said we didn't do it, I would have been pissed off if I didn't get to play with him one more time.
Well, listen, I'm sure everybody involved is glad that happened, that you got the chance to play with him. And, you know, it's always a good thing. But, Kelsey, I got a couple questions for you. Somebody in the comments, I don't know if you guys see the comments from where you are, but brought up that he was on tour, and he toured with a couple bands. Can you tell us anything about that, what bands he was with? And
So we'll circle back to the album we put out just recently. So the song Rock Bottom, listening to that song since it was first written, my father would give me VHS tapes of them at rehearsal with Keith and John, and he would give me cassettes of the rehearsals too, and my favorite song always was Rock Bottom. And I would put the cassette in, I would put it to that song, I'd dance around the living room and stuff, and that song has special meaning to me because I've been listening to that my entire life. But, I'm sorry, I keep losing my train of thought.
That's okay.
Take your time.
Yeah, it's just, it's hard right now, it's very hard. I just can't believe it's real, so.
I feel bad for you. I'm happy you guys were able to come on tonight, and I spoke to Tommy about doing this the other day, and then I was able to get you, Kelsey, to come in. I believe I spoke to Mario first about it, maybe yesterday, But then by chance, I was able to get you in on it, and I was just, you know, it was nice to have you guys come on. And, you know, we wanted to do this for him because we had a benefit one time, and JWB band played that benefit. And it was nice. Motherfuckers.
Yep.
Yeah.
So it was nice. We only got to see him play once or twice because I work on Sundays, so I don't get to go out much on Saturdays. And I got to see him play and hang out with him for a while. And, you know, I used to watch them play, John, Steve, and your dad, back in, man, the early 90s, down on Bay Street, one of the studios on Bay Street I was working in. And he was always a great guitar player. Always a great guitar player. I don't know if I ever seen him with a singer, though, until you, Mario. So you definitely added a dimension to the band, without a doubt, you know.
He always said that. It was, you know, that when I came about, it shifted something in the right direction.
I've always felt that Mario was the missing puzzle piece to the JWB band. Like, once Mario joined, because my father, when he first heard him sing, he was telling me that night, I came home from work, and my father goes, yeah, we saw this new singer who's playing a terrible and everything, and he has a phenomenal voice. Oh, my God, he was talking up a storm about you, actually. We were very, very impressed. And I just felt, because I maybe missed, out of all the shows over the past year, you've been maybe four or five shows. And just to see the progression of when it was just, when they started again, because they took some time off from the band, from, I think, the early 2000s up until they got together again, yeah. And, it was John, Steve, and my father, and John was singing. And when he joined the band, and I was listening to their sounds and everything, I was like, that is the missing piece that they needed. Like, Mario completed that band in many, many ways.
Even looking back, like, it was difficult because I didn't want to listen to anything after hearing that. I the first thing in my mind was the band, like, I felt like it just, you know, anyway. But I was like, then I saw it in my Apple Music or whatever. I saw the album cover, and I was like, well, this is weird. I said, if it was there, and I was like, let me just push shuffle, and I'll just listen to it. I was like, whatever. I was like, maybe a rocking song, come on, you know, whatever. The Endearment song comes on, which is the slow song. Mm-hmm. And, of course, I push shuffle, and I just see what comes on, and that was the first one that came on. I just sat there and then brought me to the voice notes. Mm-hmm. In my phone, and there's so much stuff that I have from me and from going to your house, me and him in the basement when he was laying down riffs and him talking about, like, so yesterday, last night, I was just sitting there and just listening to it and saying, like, wow, like, he literally had so much material, like, to play, and, like, he would just play. Like,
and he could come up with anything on the fly, too. He had perfect pitch. So you could play a note for him and be like, oh, that's an A. Play a chord. Oh, that's that. And he was always like, he could listen to a song one time on the radio and then sit there and play it right back with me.
Yep.
He was that talented and that musically inclined.
There's a lot of people like that. I've played with several of them. It takes me anywhere from a week to a month to learn a song that's 2 minutes long, and they'll sit there and figure out a Rush song right off the top of their head. And they're like, you know, why can't I do that? But yeah. He was a great musician, your dad. He really was.
Phenomenal.
And a good friend. He was just an all-around good guy and the most humble. And the one thing about Dave was, this is when me and him were total opposites. There would be times when something would happen at a show, anything random, like somebody would say something or somebody would, you know,